This week's edition of Sunday Night's Main Event is dedicated to the memory of Atsushi Aoki.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
Look, I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but boy, is it exciting!
With Dan the Mouth Labransky.
Everyone has a price!
And Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone, and I can be louder than each and every one of you!
On TSN Radio.
In clear violation of the law.
Super Showdown stinks it up, but New Japan Dominion clears the air. And for the first time since revealing the AEW title, Bret Hart speaks. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very exciting edition of Sunday Night's Main Event, helped along by Vape Nation, taking the vape shop experience to the next level. Visit VapeNationCanada.com for locations. My name is Jason Agnew, joined this week by my longtime tag team partner, Dan the Mouth Labransky. And Mouth, this past week surely has had its ups and downs.
Well, absolutely, Jay. We got lots to talk about. We're going to talk about WWE Super Showdown. We're going to talk about New Japan's Dominion. And as Jay mentioned off the top, an incredible exclusive, the one and only Bret Hart right here on the show tonight.
Yeah, for the first time since being attacked at the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony and being a huge surprise at AEW Double or Nothing, we have an exclusive interview with Bret the Hitman Hart on tonight's show, and all I'm going to say is it's very interesting. So we've got that, plus Dave Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer Insider, a tag team turmoil edition of Turnbuckle Trivia, and your feedback. We're taking a break, but we're back with the Super Showdown review, Mouth, to start things off on a great note. That is next, right here. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event.
Super kick connects by Mansoor.
Elias is stunned. Elias, reversal, Mansoor lands on the apron. He's still in it. Feet didn't hit the floor. Elias lands it. He's alone. Mansoor wins it.
There is the new WWE superstar, Mansoor.
Yeah.
That was a clip, of course, from Super Showdown. It happened Friday afternoon. If you were watching in North America, it came to us from Saudi Arabia. And Mouth, no hiding it on the broadcast. This was from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, of all the things that happened on this show, Jay, that was the one that really was like the mallet hitting me over the head, is that I could not believe how much the company embraced Saudi Arabia this time. Every other time, they wouldn't even say the name of the country, the city. This time, it's the city, it's the country. We're telling you what the weather is. They're showing lots of clips of the city.
Well, it wasn't any other time. I mean, let's be fair. The first time out, remember the Greatest Royal Rumble, they were doing the promo, the little packages of how great Saudi Arabia was. Mm. It was the second time around after the Khashoggi death that they pulled back. They were Reader's Sports Arena, whatever it was, but they wouldn't say Saudi Arabia. Well, they've definitely turned around, and I guess they feel, you know, the feet are off the fire, and you know.
I'm wondering if it isn't even something more a little bit extreme than that, in that the people that are putting out these large amounts of money for these shows actually talked to them and said, hey, we want to use these almost as promotional pieces for our country. And we don't want you guys not saying where the show is. We need you to say it's Saudi Arabia. And we, you know, you need to promote the country, talk about what's here, talk about the stadium, talk about the city. And just to top it off, and like the clip played, we need one of our guys to go over in the Battle Royal that meant nothing.
Okay. Now, if it's kind of like I'm watching this and I see that, I'm like, well, you know what? Removing Saudi Arabia, removing it being the WWE, but to put a hometown guy over in a battle royal, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
But it felt so dirty.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean? Because
well, of
it's
course,
WWE.
Jay, and because it's Saudi Arabia.
No, because also on top of that, WWE has programmed people like us, people that are listening right now, to know that a hometown babyface, odds are, does not win.
Well,
they lose,
that's
and
true.
They're embarrassed. And here, well, Ted DiBiase said everybody's got a price,
yeah.
And I guess WWE has found their price to put a hometown babyface over.
Yeah, but Jay, it'll just be for this show.
That's all it is.
Do you think you're going to see him get a push on NXT?
No.
No. Are you going to see him on Raw? No.
No.
You're not going to see him anywhere else. It's so blatant propaganda. It's unbelievable. And plus, the other thing, too, that Battle Royal meant nothing. It wasn't for any kind of match. It wasn't for a title. It wasn't for a cheesy trophy. Nothing.
This whole show meant nothing.
Well,
that's the thing.
That's very true.
Here's my question to you. If wrestling fans out there, I know a lot of you, because you were posting up on the Facebook page about you have skipped this because out of protest, you didn't want to watch it, etc., Saudi Arabia. If I skip this, Mouth, we've both watched the whole thing.
Yep.
I watched it in passing because I didn't want to spend a whole Friday afternoon watching it. But if I didn't watch this, didn't listen to the show about it, didn't know anything about it, what did I miss as a wrestling fan?
I'd like to say it a certain way, but I won't because we're on the radio. Nothing.
Yeah.
You missed nothing. Absolutely.
Nothing.
This is really, like a lot of fans said, a glorified house show.
It is.
That's all it is.
And I, listen.
No storylines removed forward, nothing.
Remove Saudi Arabia from the mix. A glorified house show on the WWE Network, I don't have a problem with, but why, if I am a fan, much like the fans that listen to this show, that follows along with storyline, why is this so in my face to tell me that it is a canon storyline that I must watch to keep up with the product, and then I watch it, and I receive no benefit from it. I've received no storyline progression from it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a show that was completely unnecessary, except the fact that the Saudi government gave them billions and billions of dollars to do it. In terms of you as a fan and things moving ahead, nothing happened.
Okay, we're not going to go through this match by match, because if you want to see it, don't. But along with that, we're just going to touch on some points. Now, there's been a lot that's been made. We talked about the Battle Royal, but of course, the main event, which was Goldberg versus Taker. Here's my take on this, Mouth. If this, you're rolling your eyes right now. People can't see it, but you're rolling your eyes. If this match, they go in, they do their entrance, they get in there. There was about 4 minutes. Goldberg's two spears. I actually sat there on the couch going, hey, you know what? Stare down, spears. Okay, okay. Undertaker makes a comeback. Undertaker gets the tombstone.
Done.
If that was it, I would, and let's take away from what actually happened during the tombstone, but like, if that was at the end, I would have been, you know what? They delivered everything I wanted. That's all I needed.
I agree with you. I literally yelled at the TV when Goldberg kicked out from the tombstone, because I felt exactly the same. These guys are hurting. They're old. They can't pull the stuff off they used to do. You want it quick. You want to get the key spots in there. You had them with the...
You had everything.
You had them with the spear. You had it with the tombstone. But the problem is they didn't stop there. And then it just got worse with, you know, Goldberg trying to do the jackhammer and could hardly lift Taker up. And then, like you said, the tombstone. If you watch it in slow motion, it looks like he dropped Goldberg right on his head.
There's also fan footage afterwards of Goldberg collapsing at the side
of the
ring.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so there are definitely problems here. Goldberg knocked himself silly when he went to the ring post as well, and you had the color there.
Yeah.
There is a whole bunch of opportunities where...
Even the ending, if you watched when Taker was down on one knee, he had a hell of a time just getting up off the ground.
This is bad news. It's just so bad. It was a complete and utter embarrassment. I mean, here's your worst match of the year.
Yes. It's funny you were saying...
Make that list.
Again, I've already started mine, actually. And I had a Baron Corbin match down.
Okay.
That's the one at the
moment.
This
topped it?
This tops it, man.
Baron Corbin's happy.
Absolutely. This was really bad. And it should not have taken place except in a really short, quick form that it could have been done with. But that's what happens when you get thrown mountains of money, right? And it's funny because Goldberg always talks about how he wanted to come back so he could see his son wrestle. I wonder how he
feels. No, so his son could see him wrestle.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. So I wonder how his son felt about this, because
Oof.
Not a very great performance, and Dad could have really got hurt.
He really could have. Along with that, you know, on the card, you also had Orton and Triple H Triple H, an older guy. Orton, just a senior guy, but not old. I'm watching this, Mouth, and let's use a music analogy for you. This is like going to see your favorite band from your teens that are now still playing the hits 40 years later.
Yeah.
And they really got nothing left.
There's
They're
no
phoning
fire.
It in completely.
Right.
All the hits are there,
yes.
But there's no passion to any of them.
And again, that's exactly how I felt. And it was even more amplified after watching Naito against Ibushi at Dominion. There was no drama. There was no kind of a there was just nothing there. They went through the motions, and they went through them for 25 minutes, Jay. That match was way too long. You know, that's got to stop, man. I mean, come on. Like, this, that was just absolutely ridiculous. I'm with you. I know he likes his matches to be long, but that match was way too long, and it just did, it did nothing. It did nothing for me. I thought it was ponderous and boring.
Was there anything out of this that we can speak positively about?
There's one thing that I want to talk about, and it's kind of a combination of something that happened on Raw and something here, and you're going to freak because it involves Shane McMahon.
Okay.
Now, I think after what I saw on Raw and the way that this kind of went here, I could see a spot for Shane McMahon. I see a spot for Shane McMahon.
I don't understand what's happening.
Well, if do you remember what happened on Raw? He mainly acted like a manager. He was a mouthpiece. Oh. And I got thinking after watching Raw, and I thought his performance on Raw was really good, and I thought, you would be amazing as a mouthpiece manager for guys like Drew McIntyre and these guys, and you almost form a stable of guys, and I could see him as part of that world. Now, I know we don't really have managers, but the minute he gets in the ring and throws those lame-ass punches, I can't handle it. He's a terrible worker, but he really has gotten a pretty good grip on being a heel with this best-in-the-world thing. And I really think if he was a mouthpiece rather than actual matches, I could actually tolerate him being part of the product.
Well, you know what? There was that promo that I still took note of. When he came out and confronted Roman Reigns for the very first time, he said, "You hit my father. How dare someone ever do that to an elderly man?" Like a week after he had punched Miz's dad. You know what I mean? Like,
it was hypocritical
to a T and perfect. Yes.
Yeah, there was just something about his performance this past week on Raw. And plus, if you watched what they did at the Super Showdown, it does look like they're spinning off Reigns with Drew now.
Yeah, that's so good. That match is going to happen at Stomping Grounds.
Right.
That match will happen. But ultimately, Mount, that's not the end. I mean, the end is, of course, Reigns beating Shane McMahon. Yeah. I'm guessing that's SummerSlam. We get to see it right here in Toronto.
You could be right. I just wanted to put it out there that I really thought if you wanted to use the guy on the roster, I think as a mouthpiece manager character, he'd actually be really good.
Well, you know, that's the nicest thing you've ever said about Shane McMahon.
And the other thing, too, that I just thought was weird, Jay, was with the cage match, they set up a cage match for the right reasons.
Okay.
Like Xavier interfered in the match and helped Kofi win, so Ziggler said, okay, I want a cage so nobody can interfere. Now, to me, it's ass backwards because it was...
The baby faces.
The baby faces doing the heel stuff and the heel wanting the cage. It's usually the other way around with the baby face wanting the cage to keep the heels out.
I think the main problem with this is I have zero interest in Dolph Ziggler at all.
Sure. But I just wanted to take note that for once they used the cage match stip the right way, because we're always crabbing about how they just throw a cage match out there and it doesn't mean anything. I was actually surprised that they're going to do it.
Along with that, on the card, we also had, in the Battle Royal, I just wanted to toss this out there, it was just such a cluster of a whole bunch of guys.
You know what was funny? Is that the announcers spent the bulk of the match just trying to tell you who was in there. Like, they themselves didn't even know, right? And all of a sudden, you'd go, hey, that guy, the match has been going for like 10, 15 minutes, and you'd go, oh, that guy's in there.
You couldn't see anyone. No. I mean, there was just too many nameless, faceless people. Also, who decides who gets an entrance? Like, Cesaro gets an entrance, but Ricochet doesn't?
There was lots of those where that were ridiculous,
Also, you had Authors of Pain. They return.
Mm-hmm.
They're back for the first time in months, and they get hoofed by the Viking Warriors.
Yeah.
That the Viking Raiders?
Yeah.
I don't know what their name is.
The Raiders now, I think. Raiders.
Viking Raiders. Yeah. So they get tossed by the Viking Raiders. Like that. Why put them into this? I know you need bodies.
Yeah, but that could lead to a match in NXT something.
It's the other way. Viking Raiders are the ones that are on camera and are established right now. Authors of Pain come in, and they're the ones tossing the guys out.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I gotcha.
The return should be successful,
right?
Not automatically be thrown out and seem like nothing.
I don't know. They needed 50 guys. Like, honestly, to me, this was, you know what? You got yourself in trouble. You said there's 50 guys. Now you got to find 50 guys that we care about. And I knew it would be like that. But the thing that surprised me, And if you think back to when Mark Andrade and I made our picks for this, he was the only one that picked someone that was actually in it.
Yeah, does he get a point for that?
Not in my book, no, because it's you had to. The question was who wins the match, not who's in the Battle Royal. But I found it amazing that so many of the top-end guys were left out of it. Like, I just thought there would have been a lot more. Like, when it comes down, like you said, the guys that get entrances, Cesaro, Miz, I'm like, these are the top guys going in? Like,
yeah, it was. I'm surprised we did not see Legends. Why didn't we see? Considering the way you're basing this entire promotion around Undertaker and Goldberg, that's what this guy, this prince,
likes.
Wants.
He laughs.
So why not bring back some novelty? No, you can't do that. But like, you were talking like Attitude Era guys, you know, I guess Road Dogg and Billy Gunn aren't available, but like guys of that stature to like fly him over.
They could certainly have the money to dangle at them to come, I'm sure. Right?
Yeah, why not a couple of those? That would actually make it more interesting for me if you're going to do.
Christian's not doing anything.
Well, he can't because he's got the concussion.
Oh.
So I don't think he'll ever be cleared again.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? Like, but guys of that era, of that stature, to show up and do something. Someone, I think one of you guys for the picks, you picked Kurt Angle. And I was like, you know what? I mean, I know he's retired.
I picked Big Show, right? And I thought,
perfect.
That's what I was basing that pick on, and the fact that they like those older guys. So I thought they'd put him in there.
We saw none of that. We are going to take a break. Listen, we haven't touched on the Lars Sullivan match for a reason. We need to dedicate a segment to what's going on with Lars Sullivan, the way he's being booked, and that first promo on SmackDown. We will do that in the second hour of the show, because in this hour, we still got the news to come next, and then part one of our Bret Hart interview. So stick with us. There is lots more to come. It is a jam-packed edition of Sunday Night's Main Event. I'm friends with the monster, the
son of my bed. And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Welcome back. We spent a lot of time talking about an awful show put on by WWE, but listen, New Japan put on a great show that was very eventful, and it kicked off with Jon Moxley defeating Shota Umino in about 4 minutes. Now, the more notable thing here was after the match, Moxley declared he wished to enter the G1. Shingo Tagaki would do the same later in the night after defeating Satoshi Kojima, but in the most surprising event of the night, Kenta. Yeah, the former Hideo Itami appeared on the show and declared his intentions for the G1.
See, that's why I never stopped calling him Kenta.
Because
I knew he would be back.
Now, as you may remember, Kenta was released on February 22nd by WWE, and the thought was that he would return to Pro Wrestling Noah, where he had wrestled for 14 years before heading to WWE. So, I mean, Mout, this had to be quite the surprise with you watching last night.
Well, it's a big enough surprise because Shibata came out first to bring him out, right? And that's a surprise on its own because he doesn't wrestle anymore. He works in the dojo in LA. And to see him was a surprise. And then, to have him bring out Kenta, it was great. Really smart. Like, traditionally with New Japan, they always let you know who the entrance to the G1 is after Dominion.
Of course.
And I thought this was great the way they actually worked it into the show so that by the end of the show, you knew three different people that were going to be in the G1. I thought it was really clever.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see this debut as well. And we'll talk to Dave Meltzer about how this, like, if he knows how this came about, because I think the presumption was Kenta going back to Noah.
Yes, well, that's the thing. He has been associated with Misawa and Noah for so long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of thought that's where he would go to, but I am very happy to see him in the New Japan mix. It's going to be great.
Well, he needs a bit of revitalization after a terrible, terrible run in WWE.
We just put that up.
Okay, it's not a Tommy, it's Kenta. All right. Well, moving on, there's lots more notable news here from this card.
Yeah, we had three title changes on the show last night. Tomohiro Ishii, one of my favorites, defeated Tai Chi to win the NEVER Openweight title. That's the third time that Ishii has won that. Great match as well, very hard-hitting match. Will Ospreay defeated Dragon Lee to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. Again, amazing match between these two guys. They've had many matches in the past, and they just worked together so well. And this was my favorite match of the night, this next one. Tetsuya Naito defeated Kota Ibushi to win the IWGP Intercontinental title. I thought these guys just had a hard-hitting match, really dramatic. Crowd was very much into Naito. Actually, the crowd is interesting on this match because they would go back and forth. Sometimes they would be heavy for Naito, and other times they would be heavy for Ibushi. But it was very dramatic, great great match. Really enjoyed it. And then, of course, we had the main event, Okada versus Chris Jericho. And despite what some thought that Jericho would go over, he did not. He's the number one contender, but he didn't go over. And after 25 minutes and a missed Rainmaker by Okada and a missed Judas Effect by Jericho, that's his backwards elbow, Okada managed to turn the Codebreaker into a pinfall and defeat Jericho, which was a kind of a cool ending because you're so used to seeing the Rainmaker at the end. And the fact that Jericho is calling himself the Painmaker in kind of mockery of Okada, I thought they would really seal the deal and have him beat him with the Rainmaker. But it was actually pretty interesting, and it was a surprise. So that was really cool as well. So, I thought overall it was very, 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 very good Dominion.
And then after the match, you also had the attack with Jericho attacking Okada.
Yes.
And then Tanahashi coming in. So do you foresee that, you know, Jericho's going to keep working New Japan, and is the program Tanahashi now?
Jay, this is New Japan. The booking is incredibly simple and basic. Absolutely. I'm sure that's where they're going to go next. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about WWE booking now, Mouth.
Okay.
With the fallout of Super Showdown, there were a few announcements for matches at WWE Stomping Grounds, which takes place on Sunday, June the 23rd. Seth Rollins will defend the Universal title against Baron Corbin.
Yawn. Again. Insert yawn here.
Kofi Kingston will defend the WWE Championship against Dolph Ziggler again, this time though in a steel cage match, because that makes sense. Becky Lynch will...
No, but Jay, it does make sense this time.
It does?
Yeah, because Xavier interfered to help Kofi win. So okay. Dolph said, I don't want any interference. I was surprised that they actually used it the right way this time. That was one of the biggest shocks on the show for me.
All right, I guess you're right. It does make sense until we actually have Xavier get into the cage and interfere
again.
Exactly. We'll see what happens.
There'll be 10 guys in the cage.
Becky Lynch will defend her Raw Women's Championship against Lacey Evans. These matches will join the previously announced Alexa Bliss versus Bayley for the Raw Women's title. What a great pay-per-view that is shaping up to be. I bet you can't wait to be back in a couple weeks, Mouth.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's just rematches again. Unbelievable.
Yep.
Moving on here. Mickie James suffered a knee injury at last Saturday night's house show in a match against Carmella. The diagnosis this week was a torn ACL, and she'll undergo surgery and thus will be out for the foreseeable future.
If you're looking for DJZ or Shane Strickland on the NXT roster, you're not going to find anyone by those names because they got new identities this past week. DJZ will now be known as Joaquin Wild, and Shane Strickland will now be known as Isaiah Scott.
Do they have a hat with just a bunch of names in them and they just pick them out of the hat?
Actually, I'm told what happens is that the performers get to submit a list of names and then WWE chooses which name they're going to go
by. So they have a bit of a say in it?
A bit of a say, yeah. So, and in case you missed it, former Impact X Division champion Trevor Lee also recently got a new name. He is Cameron Grimes, and air guitarist Eric Bugenhagen, which I actually like that, is now known as Rick Bugs.
Is that how it's pronounced? Bugs?
I don't know.
Bugs?
It could be. B-U-G-E-Z.
I'm thinking it's Rick Bugs.
Here's
or something.
The thing, though, Mouth. I mean, it's Bugenhagen.
It fits right
or
in. Yep.
Bugs.
Yeah. I don't know why you got it. And Cameron Grimes, you're going to tell me that Trevor Lee submitted the name Cameron Grimes?
I guess so. Well, I mean,
I don't know.
It's like Cameron from the Funkadactyl and then Vic Grimes together.
Okay, if you say so. Again, moving on, Ring of Honor has really fallen off as far as news and attendance goes, but did manage to make the headlines this past week with a little bit of controversy between Bully Ray and a fan named Josh Ketch at last Sunday's State of the Art event in Portland, Oregon. Now, essentially, the incident involved the fan, Ketch, sitting at ringside and hurling insults at ROH talent, which included Velvet Sky and Mandy Leon. He was then escorted backstage and confronted by Bully Ray. Ketch then claimed that Bully Ray tried to intimidate him, saying he was crossing the line with his insult.
Now, let's remember here that Bully Ray is coupled up with Velvet Sky,
right,
and some of the alleged insults involved references to him. Ketch claims he wasn't being vulgar and was both struck and spat on by Mandy Leon in addition to being insulted by Sky. Sky and Leon accused Ketch of verbal sexual harassment on Twitter, referring to his heckles as lewd and disgusting and having evil intent. Bully Ray released a statement admitting to talking to Ketch backstage, but he said he did not intimidate him and was merely sticking up for the allure after Ketch crossed the line, citing other fans who can back up that Ketch was out of line during both nights on the Pacific Northwest Tour. Ketch tweeted out he has yet to be contacted by Ring of Honor, even though this investigation continues. This is weird, Mouth. I mean, I know fans can get out of hand, but when it comes right down to it, like, number one, this feels like what happens at a wrestling event with fans yelling too much. And on top of that, why did Bully Ray take him aside? Like, that's what security is for.
Well, to me, that's old school 70s, where you have that person that gets out of hand and you take them backstage and the wrestlers have their way with them. This is absolutely ridiculous. They are heels. They are going to be insulted.
Yeah.
And in fact, if they are heels, they should be happy that they are getting that much of a reaction out of the fans. They just said that, you know, ROH is in trouble. They need acts to get people interested. Well, if someone's interested and they're yelling names out... I've heard the craziest stuff ever at wrestling shows, right? It's not like there's any kind of restraint
at wrestling shows. There's something to be said for going over the line, but it takes a lot. I mean, maybe this guy was, but again, I don't know if it was Bully Ray. I don't think it was Bully Ray's place.
I don't think so either. I think that's up to management if you're going to be upset about something like that. But again, I don't see it. And plus, we have to take a little bit from the other guys. We're getting multiple stories on this. The guy also explains, Ketch says that Mandy Leone, he claims she spit at him. And I don't care who you are, you don't spit at the fans.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
Not in this day and age. You don't spit at people, all right? So if that is part of it as well, then they're at fault as well. So it's a messed up story. I don't know what happens from here.
It's a lot of he said, she said, he said, she said. It is what's going on here.
Yeah, exactly.
If we don't hear much about Ring of Honor, Mouth, we really don't hear anything about Impact, but we do have a bit of news here from Impact.
Yes, couple of notes here. TJP returned to Impact at this past Thursday's tapings. He's back in the X Division title picture. And Impact has added a women's monster ball match. Can you believe it? For the July Slammiversary show with Taya Valkyrie versus Sue Young versus Rosemary versus Jessica Havoc. And in a hilarious turn of events, Pursuit TV aired the wrong episode of Impact Wrestling once again this week. The even funnier news is that this is the second time this has happened in a span of 2 months. The airing of the previous week's episode also happened on May 17th. I shouldn't laugh, but that is just kind of silly.
No, you can laugh at that company. Okay. I don't think either one of us has any problem with laughing at that particular company.
Yes, that is true.
Sean Ricker, better known as Eli Drake, announced this week that he is officially a free agent and posted up his email address for bookings. Now, Impact Wrestling on April 7th said that they had terminated their relationship with Drake, stemming from an incident where he refused to take part in an intergender match with Tessa Blanchard. Drake's contract actually ended on May 31st, but there has been some controversy and legal troubles beyond that due to the way he left the company. Anyhow, according to Drake, he's free to be booked, and it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up.
Yes.
He is gifted on the microphone.
Yes, I agree. He's one of those guys, especially as a heel, that it's very easy to hate him.
Yes.
He's really good at it. He looks arrogant. He pulls it off really well. So, yeah, I that's a good question. Does he make it into NXT, or do we see him in AEW?
Well,
those are the two possibilities, I think, right?
Here's the thing. Like, AEW, why would I need him when I have MJF?
Well, that is true.
MJF is better.
You're right. And you know what? It's very similar character, too. You're right. And they are really focusing in on him, too, right?
He's a superstar waiting to happen.
Yeah.
He's also a fresh face that has not been really made by any other company.
That's true.
You know, he spent some time in MLW, but the national stage awaits for MJF, and that is going to be via AEW.
Right.
So there's a rock. He got the spot with Brett.
Yes.
You know
that's
what I
right.
mean?
Yes, exactly.
Like, that's a really important spot.
It's true. Yeah.
So if that's the case, then, you know, Eli Drake. If he ends up in WWE or NXT, what makes him different from The Miz?
Well, that's it. Exactly. He gets lost in the shuffle. I mean, I don't know. Ring of Honor could certainly use someone like him.
Yep.
But I don't know if that's where he himself would want to go. I think it just depends on what kind of offers he gets.
ROH, MLW.
Mm.
That's my thoughts where he'll end up, because I don't know if there's a spot. And he could probably go to NXT. You know, they could take him there. They could use a talker there. But as far as ascension up to the main roster, I don't know what the future would hold
for him. I think ROH is the best choice because they really are struggling for talent at the moment. All right, PWG revealed that the 2019 Battle of Los Angeles will be held on Thursday, September the 19th, Friday, September the 20th, and Sunday, September 22nd. The three-night tournament is usually held on consecutive dates from Friday to Sunday, but there is no show on Saturday of that weekend this year due to a prior booking at the venue.
John Cena has joined the cast of Fast and Furious 9. The character that he's playing is not yet known. However, Deadline, that's the source that's reporting the story, has said that it's a badass style character. Now, if you're thinking this is going to reunite, that is, the main event of WrestleMania 28, don't get your hopes up, as Deadline also noted that they've heard The Rock is not going to be in Fast and Furious 9. I'm actually curious to see.
There's a stipulation that says the Fast and Furious movies can only have one wrestler film. Yes, one wrestler
No,
per
that's
film.
Not true.
Has it happened?
The current one has The Rock.
Goldberg?
No, it has The Rock.
Batista.
It has Roman Reigns.
Oh, that's right.
He plays The Rock's brother
that's
in it, actually.
Right. That's
which I'm
right.
Listen, I'm not a fan of this franchise. I've really never got into it.
Me neither.
But from the promos, I'm actually curious if what Roman does on camera, because I think he does have the potential in playing himself or being properly written for that he could transfer over not too bad to the silver screen.
Interesting. Why does that like kind of moody loner type?
I just think like a casual guy that's actually likable. If you write for him that way, when you see him at a Comic-Con and he's just joking back and forth,
right.
He's a perfectly fine individual. He's a very likable guy.
Right.
When he scripted on WWE TV, not likable.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, one sad note this week comes to us from Japan, as Atsushi Aoki has passed away at the age of 41 following a motorcycle accident. Aoki was killed in Tokyo on Monday night after his bike failed to take a curve, hitting the wall of a tunnel. Aoki's wrestling career dates back to his debut in Pro Wrestling Noah in 2005, and he was the current AJPW World Junior Champion, having just won the title on May the 20th. He was supposed to defend the championship against Hikaru Sato on June the 18th at Korakuen Hall.
And there is one MMA note we'll touch on here. It was announced that UFC lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov will face interim lightweight champion Dustin Poirier this September at UFC 242 in the promotion's return to Abu Dhabi. Nurmagomedov is undefeated, currently sitting at 27-0, and hasn't fought since last October's win over Conor McGregor that resulted in the post-fight brawl, which led to Nurmagomedov being suspended for 9 months by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Poirier won the interim belt with a unanimous decision over Max Holloway at April's UFC 236. Now, of course, the bigger question around this fight is when or if Conor McGregor will ever return to the UFC. And with the way in which their pay-per-view, or lack thereof, is now positioned, that's more of a question than ever before. And that wraps up our news pack this week. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, the moment that many of you have been waiting for. Bret Hart speaks about what happened to him at the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony this past year. He was attacked. How did he feel about it? He hasn't talked about it yet, but you get it next, right here. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. The very familiar music of Bret the Hitman Hart bringing us back for this next segment of Sunday Night's Main Event. It's funny, Bret Hart being retired, all of a sudden in the past couple months has become more relevant than ever to professional wrestling.
Well, yeah, that's it, exactly. I mean, he was at the Hall of Fame ceremony there so he could induct the Hart Foundation and his partner Jim Neidhart, and we had that whole weird thing with the fan there that attacked him, a very scary situation. And then one of the most pleasant surprises on the AEW Double or Nothing pay-per-view was that they enlisted Bret to unveil their new championship title belt, which I thought was an amazing coup, because the guy is recognized as one of the greatest wrestling champions ever, and to have his stamp of approval on this, that was an amazing coup for AEW.
So we will get to that. Now, we did this interview a little bit earlier today, and we went chronologically in the interview. So we started things off talking about the WWE Hall of Fame. And actually, the weekend that this happened, I was hosting the morning show at News Talk 1010. And when I do other radio, I promise myself, you know,
I don't want to talk about
wrestling. That's for this show. Well, I couldn't escape it because this story was huge, especially in Canada.
Yep.
So when we talked to Bret earlier today, you know, we asked him, there you are. You're in a moment, a bit of an emotional moment. You're accepting the Hall of Fame induction for himself and Jim Neidhart, and all of a sudden you're attacked. What is going through your brain?
Well, you know, I didn't see the guy until it was too late. And, I could tell something was happening, but I actually thought it was a fight in the crowd or something like that. And, you know, you never take anything for granted. I'm consider myself lucky that was as insignificant an incident as it was. I mean, I know everyone thought I got punched and hurt or, you know, manhandled by that guy, but it was more the other way around, I think. But it was more of a bad day for that guy. I feel bad that it happened. I mean, it was a stupid thing to do. And I know something happened a few weeks ago with Arnold Schwarzenegger where it happened to him. And I hope it doesn't become something that people think is funny to do all the time. Because, you know, same time, you take that incident that happened in New York at WrestleMania, it's could be like John Lennon happened. You know, he didn't think anyone would shoot him in the back walking into his house or whatever. And, you know, so you can't take anything for granted. Wrestling fans are very passionate and they get very caught up in the storylines and the things that go on in wrestling. And all that's good, but I don't recommend attacking wrestlers at the Hall of Fames.
Well, I'm guessing if that had been the 1970s, the guy would have just been taken to the back and would have been dealt with by the other wrestlers. Did you ever hear anything like his motivation or why he did it or what he was trying to prove or anything?
No, I never heard various sort of theories or things that were put forward. I heard he was a devoted fan of Vince's, that he loved Vince McMahon. I've heard the other way around, that he wanted to do harm to Vince, and by doing harm to me was the way to do that. I don't know which one of those is true. I don't really care to talk too much about it because I think it gives that's what they want. They want you guys
attention.
Like, just want the tension and want the headline, or want they want me and you guys, you us all, to be talking about it on the radio right now. And I just try to, I just didn't talk about it since this is the first time I've talked about it. So. I feel bad it happened. Not I feel bad for him. I don't like to see anyone, especially a fan, get hurt. He got hurt pretty good, I think. And some of the wrestlers that jumped on top of him landed on me pretty hard to trying to protect me, which is also I appreciate all that too. But it's just better that it's left unsaid, kind of thing.
We'll move on from that, Brett, but we know you were taken to hospital that night to be checked out. Was that your decision or was it recommended?
It was just a check. It was just to make sure that there was nothing wrong. I'm fine from it.
So there you go. I mean, that's the story. And I guess Brett's right. I mean, he didn't want to publicize this.
No.
And that's probably one of the reasons
Smart.
Why he hasn't said that much as of yet. So it's nice that he took time out to talk about it here with us today. But I'm sure what's on most wrestling fans' minds is his latest appearance. And that is, of course, AEW.
Yeah, and will there be more appearances? Is he involved with the product? What does he think about some of the talent? Well, hey, we're going to let you know.
We have those answers. It's going to be in our next hour of the show. Yeah, so hour two, we'll have the second half of that interview with Bret Hart. Along with that, Dave Meltzer is coming up for the Wrestling Observer Insider and some turnbuckle trivia as well. So stick with us. A whole nother hour of Sunday night's main event.
It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Just after midnight, that means we head to San Jose to talk to the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer. It's been a busy weekend, to say the least, for you.
Yeah. I watched Super Showdown and UFC and Dominion and... Yeah, it's a real busy weekend.
That's good enough right there. Yeah,
three major shows. Yeah.
Some of them feeling longer than others. but Mouth did stay up last night. He's seen all of New Japan. And let's just start with the main event here, with Jericho losing to Okada. Not necessarily a surprise, but do you think this hurts Jericho because he is going into fight for the AEW title coming up?
You know, it's you know, you can't, like, if you're booking one company, you really can't control the other one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say, like, it's a general rule, since he's going to fight for the AEW title, you wouldn't want him losing. But you could also do it another way in the sense of if they could ever get their act together, him losing could turn out to be a benefit, because if Jericho wins the title, which I think he should, then you've got a Jericho-Okada match in where he could give it back. But right now, I don't know that relationship is at the level that they can do that. But, you know, that would make perfect sense, you know, as far as long-term booking.
Well,
it would be something that New Japan, that would be how New Japan would book it, too. Right now, there's no relationship, but that can, you know, hopefully change.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of, it's 2019, and that idea of protecting your champion, you don't want him to lose anywhere. I mean, we have the internet and everything nowadays. I mean, I don't really think that's a relevant way to think, really, in this day and age.
Well, it is and it isn't. It's a dated way of thinking, but a lot of people think dated. But then a lot of fans want that out of their wrestling. They want that idea that the champion doesn't go and, you know, lose. But, I mean, he's not the champion today. Like, if he was the if he was AEW champion, that result wouldn't happen today.
Right. Yeah, they would.
AEW would insist on that, and I'm sure Jericho would too.
Now, at the end of the match, we had the bit with Tanahashi, who was doing commentary and that kind of stuff. Is that a plan to move forward with him and Tanahashi? And I'm guess we wouldn't see that till, geez, I don't know, Wrestle Kingdom. I don't know when we see it at Wrestle Kingdom.
It could be Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah. I know. That's a match that they've been talking about, so it makes sense. Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about Moxley. He's entered into the G1, and we'll get to Kenta in a sec. But Moxley in particular, with his contract with AEW, will he be allowed to work in the U.S. under New Japan? Because to me, if I'm Cody and the boys, I'm saying you can do stuff in Japan, but when you come over here, this is our territory.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing, and I don't know. I should probably ask about the particulars of all that, but I think with G1, the reality is G1 does start in Dallas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the G1 guys should be at all the G1s. But, I don't know yet what that situation is. Because, one of the things with those guys working New Japan is that if they do it in the United States, it's supposed to... they're really not supposed to do it in the United States. But I don't know the exact wording of the contract. But... they're free to work in Japan, but it's that becomes a really weird one because it's the G1 tournament, which he's free to work, but there's one show in the United States, and, you know, his U.S. contract rights are AEW, so you're right, that's a really, you know, I mean, does that mean that they'll give him the right to do the one show? I think they probably would.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, they're not that strict on their guys working elsewhere until the TV starts. Now, next year, they may not be
so anyone, willing. Yeah.
If the G1's in the United States, because once their TV starts, then they don't want the guys working in the United States.
And again, Dave, I mean, for a promotion like AEW, at least at this point, where it's mostly the hardcore fans watching it, isn't it a bit of a feather in the cap to have a guy? Like, if he goes far in the G1 and makes it almost to, say, the finals, I mean, wouldn't that be a good thing anyways for AEW to say, hey, our guy almost made it to the end of the G1?
Well, I don't know if they'll acknowledge that because the relationship is really weird between the two sides. But as far as for credibility, I think that it's not even how far you go, but how good you look. Because, I mean, Hangman Page didn't win a lot of matches last year's G1, but he ended up a much bigger star because he was in G1. And I think that the same thing might happen. Moxley, Moxley will probably win a lot of matches.
Yeah.
Jeff Cobb will probably go there and win some matches. But I've got a feeling that by the end of the G1, Jeff Cobb and Moxley may be seen as much bigger stars if they have big G1s. I mean, it's always... so far with Moxley, I don't think he's been exposed or anything like that, so he's looked good. So my gut is he'll continue to look good there, but if you don't look good there, that also could hurt you.
That's very true. There's two sides to every coin, for sure.
Hey, let's talk about Kenta. Were you aware that this surprise was going to happen at the card last night?
No. I didn't know about Kenta.
Are you surprised because it was suspected that he was headed back to Noah?
Yeah, well, I mean, the other surprise, too, yeah, which means he probably isn't. New Japan could use him. I think that the big surprise is probably that I wonder if WWE is going to release anybody ever again. Because between Moxley and Kenta, yeah.
But it's such a better spot for Kenta. Like, and,
oh, much better, yeah.
And I thought it was really cool the way they did it, that let Shibata be the one that, to actually bring him out. I thought that was a really cool way to go about it.
Right, because they are best friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's that instant connection there, too.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, too, Dave, is Will Ospreay's position in the company, because judging from the promos he's been doing lately, the ones in the Super Juniors and that, and before this, it seems like they're dropping him in that spot they had Kenny Omega in originally before he left, where he was going to kind of be the face of North America. Like, you know, Ospreay's even going to move to Japan. Is that the plan going forward, do you know?
I don't know exactly, but they certainly are. I mean, like, if you watch, they're building so much around him. They
yeah.
want to make him the new super, super junior heavyweight. I mean, junior heavyweight superstar. Him moving to Japan's not a new thing, because I saw him in January, and he basically told me that him and his girlfriend's dream was to live in Japan
oh.
and do it this year. So it's something that they've been talking about for, you know, I mean, in January, he was talking like it was like he's going to do it, not like I'm thinking of doing it.
Right.
I think he loves it there. He loves New Japan. She loves working with Stardom.
Oh,
so it's kind
perfect.
Of like, and she's getting a big push with Stardom. So it kind of works out real well for them to do that. Plus, they both get to keep their careers and be together. If he's running all over the world,
sure.
She's running all over the world, you know, it's hard in a relationship. I mean, it's still hard, but if they're both in Japan most of the time, then they're at least around each other more, and they've got a place, and it makes sense, and it's less travel.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think?
But I mean, as far as there's going to be a real battle with Will Ospreay and Jay White. It's not going to be one's the top corner. I think it's going to be both of them.
Oh, interesting.
But that's how I look at it. But to me, he shot past. I mean, like, Jay White was the guy when he beat
Omega.
He won the title and everything. But now I feel like Will Ospreay passed him.
Yeah, well, I think Ospreay is better on the promos. But I wanted to ask, is he better than having Kenny Omega? Because, I mean, really, Kenny Omega, if you were going to make some moves into the States, I think he would have caught maybe more attention than an Ospreay would.
Right now, Kenny Omega would be better, but Will Ospreay's 26 years old, and Will Ospreay's already fantastic.
Mm-hmm,
and,
true.
You know, in time, I think that, you know, the problem with Will Ospreay, the only problem is his body holding up.
Right.
Because if his body holds up for the next 10 years, he's going to be the greatest wrestler of all time. You know, I mean, no matter what you think of Omega, the fact is that Will Ospreay at 26 is better than Omega at 26. So if he improves at the same rate Omega did,
right?
You know, he's much better than Shawn Michaels was at 26. Much better. So I mean, my point is, if he improves at the level that these guys, you know, Kenny Kobashi, any of these guys, Tanahashi, none of them were as good as he is at 26. And you know, he's already in the spotlight. So like I said, like in the ring, he easily could be the greatest of all time if his body holds up, and that's a giant.
That is. For his style, absolutely.
Yeah, and he's put a lot of mileage on his body to get to this point, yeah.
Well, that's definitely high praise, so we look forward to following that along. And speaking of miles on people's bodies, we saw that at Super Showdown.
We sure did.
Dave.
Brutal.
Is disaster the right word for this card?
Yes, I would think the card is
a whole, yeah. He didn't even think twice about that.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about it. Have you heard any word from backstage about the approach to these events? Do they continue to have to be promoted? Because I'm looking at this from a fan's perspective, and if I did not watch this card, I missed nothing. And as a house show, that's fine, but there's so much promotion and emphasis on television, and there's no reward for anyone watching.
Yeah, especially because they all but told you that Brock was going to cash in.
Yes.
And then he still didn't. I thought that was bad. The Battle Royal, you know, it's like, I'm guessing that the winner of the Battle Royal, we're never going to see him again.
No, exactly.
So that's kind of like, I mean, it was nice for a pop in the building, but as far as long-term part of the story, yeah, it was useless.
In terms of that, though, Dave, because they really went heavy on the Saudi Arabia stuff this time, and I'm really curious if whether that was a WWE decision to really go that way, or did they get any flack from the government or the prince saying, hey, man, you have to say this is Saudi Arabia, you have to promote us as a, you know, a good, fun place? I'm just curious how they came to the decision to go so Saudi Arabia heavy on the show.
I got to think it's external. I've got external. You know, those guys, the people who are paying the money have, you know, are the ones that are going to have a lot of influence. Because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things on this show that were, you know, were not what WWE would have wanted. You know, you could tell. You know, so, especially not having the women's match.
So do you think Mansoor was picked out by the Saudis to win the Battle Royal?
That I don't know. That could easily just be them kissing ass to the government, because the relationship, it's very clear that the relationship is it's not perfect. I mean, I don't know, like, what state it's in. And, you know, probably Vince and those guys are the only ones. But you could see with, you know, again, the whole thing with Natty and Bliss, that there's certainly something weird going on. You don't fly people over there and then them not even be on the show.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know what?
That's either a miscommunication. I mean, I was told that they were going back and forth, and then at the end it was like a no. But I mean, the no obviously came at the last minute because they went on the flight. So once you have that, I think that maybe there's this feeling that we have to kiss their ass and get this relationship smooth because it's so much money. And, you know, that's a big moment for them because they get to have their guy, you know, go out there and win and everybody's happy. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's a cool thing. I wish it was a guy who they were
going to push.
It was on the main roster, but that is what it is.
We actually hadn't touched on that on the show as of yet, but Natalya and Alexa Bliss were flown over there. They were supposed to have a match, and then not only were they not allowed to have a match, but were not allowed to appear on the card at all?
Nope. They were not on the card at all.
But
I mean, they weren't on TV at all. Yeah, they weren't allowed, yeah.
But Renee was. They got away with that.
Yeah, but how many times did you see her face on the thing? I mean, you did, but it was only like once or twice.
Mm-hmm. Is there any word on the condition of Goldberg? Because there's fan footage of him collapsing at ringside, and this just looked horrendous.
I mean, he was on the plane, and he flew home and everything. He did have a concussion, though. But, I mean, I know people who, you know, were on the flight with him and everything, and he was, you know, it wasn't like he had to stay behind. So
he's a very lucky individual. He may have made a lot of money for that match, but he could have walked out of there on a stretcher, man. That match was not a pretty sight for either guy.
Oh no, that tombstone was scary.
Yes, though. Yes.
Yeah,
and when he tried to do the jackhammer to Taker, he couldn't even get him up there.
The only reason that screwed up was because he was already concussed, I'm sure. I don't think that, like, people are like, he was too old and couldn't do it. It's like, you know, you knock yourself out and then try to do it. You know what I mean? It's like, if he wasn't knocked out, it wouldn't be a problem. But I mean, the problem was, realistically, I mean, is as soon as they saw he was knocked out, they should have stopped the match.
Yes, yes.
It's easy for us to say, and it's a lot harder when you're in the main event of this dream match in front of 30,000 or whatever the number of people there and all those people watching. You know, it's like the protocol should be to stop it. But they didn't, and that's what happened. Because they didn't, you had this really bad match.
Yeah, it was not good at all. Not a pretty sight.
Well, it kind of summed up that card pretty well, actually. Dave, we're going to let you go, but what is coming up in the Observer this week?
Well, coverage of all this stuff and, you know, whatever fallout there is, and perhaps a story on one of the lowest-rated Raws of all time tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good luck against the Raptors tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah, especially in Canada.
Yeah, good luck.
In the United States as well. But I'm going to have more on the pay-per-view numbers from...
Double or Nothing?
Double or Nothing and comparisons. I got more comparisons to run through. I mean, that's, to me, one of the most amazing stories about Double or Nothing is that it's not drawing from the WWE audience. It's drawing from a completely different audience, which is sort of what happened with Raw and Nitro. And I think that's a great sign.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So because Impact never drew
a big
audience.
That's right.
Impact drew a very heavy WWE audience. And these guys, you know, it looks like, I mean, there was the overlap was like, you know, between WrestleMania and Double or Nothing was like, you know, 2.5% on pay-per-view, which I know is misleading because most of your viewers are on the network. But even if we... you know, have that correlation, it's still like 78% of the people who watched Double or Nothing did not watch WrestleMania. So that's a very different audience.
Interesting.
Sounds good, Dave. Look forward to that and look forward to talking to you next week at this very same time.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. Dave Meltzer, of course, you can read all of his work and hear his podcast at WrestlingObserver.com. He, Brian Alvarez, and Garrett, they all do a great job there. We are going to take a break, but when we come back, it is Turnbuckle Trivia time. We're going to play some Tag Team Turmoil. That's next right here, Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. And yes, we've just begun.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's main event presents...
Everybody hands go up.
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there.
It is Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday night's main event. We have our two patrons on the line to play the game. First up, he returns with an 0-1 record at this point. Henry from Vegas, baby, Vegas. How you doing, Henry?
Good, good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. And your opponent today, Kyle from West Virginia, baby, West Virginia. Does not have that ring to it, Kyle. Sorry.
No, it really doesn't.
Kyle, it's your first time playing on the show today, so an 0-0 record. And guys, here is what we're doing. I mean, we have Jimmy Hart on the show tonight, so I figured Jimmy Hart, well-known for managing tag teams, let's do some tag team turmoil. So that means I'm going to give you the organization and the members of the tag team, and you have to tell me the name of that tag team. All right, guys?
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, here we go. And of course, you're playing for a t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com of your choice. It's the best spot online to get your wrestling t-shirt fixed. Henry, you're going to go first. Kyle, you're going to go second. Henry, first up, we go to the WWE. Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, Ted DiBiase Jr. Name that faction.
I totally forgot.
Oh, Henry.
I'm blank right now.
Oh, my goodness. I started you with what I thought was a softball. Sorry. That, of course, is Legacy. Legacy.
That's right.
All right. Going to Kyle now. Kyle, first one for you. We stay in the WWE. Sylvain Grenier, Rob Conway, Rene Dupree. They were?
La Resistance.
La Resistance is correct. Very good. All right. It is 1-0 at this point. And now, classic tag team for you, Henry. WWF, Afa, and Sika.
The Wild Samoans.
The Wild Samoans is correct. Very good. It's amazing how we remember the old ones. Kyle, to you, WWF, Haku and Tama.
Oh, the Head Shrinkers.
That is incorrect. Haku and Tama were the Islanders.
Ah, right.
And here we go. Henry, Impact Wrestling. Yes, we're going to do stuff outside WWE. Impact Wrestling, let's go. Velvet Sky, Angelina Love, Madison Rayne. Who were they, Henry?
They were the Beautiful People.
They were the Beautiful People. Very good. All right. Over to you now, Kyle. Getting a little tricky here. Ring of Honor, Velvet Sky, Angelina Love, Mandy Leone.
I don't know it.
Oh, they were in the news this week. They are Allure. Allure. All righty. Henry, back to you for this one. WWF, Haku, and Andre the Giant.
I want to say they went by the Heenan family, but I think I'm wrong.
They were part of the Heenan family, but together as a tag team, they were the Colossal Connection. The Colossal Connection. All right, that means, Kyle, you can get back into this. We're going to go to WWE for this one. Robbie and Rory McAllister, together they were?
The Highlanders.
Yes, they were. Very impressive, remembering that very forgettable tag team. It's 2-2. We go into the final question. We go back to WWF for you, Henry. Mosh and Thrasher.
The Headbangers.
That's right. They were the Headbangers. Very good. And to Kyle for your final question, if you get this, you tie. NXT. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable.
Oh, my God. I remember their name. Shoot. I can't remember what they went by.
Kyle, no! They're so forgotten on the main roster, you could not remember American Alpha as their excellent tag team in NXT, but much like they've been forgotten, you forgot. And that means congratulations, Henry, a 1-1 record. We're sending a t-shirt to Vegas for you of your choice. Thank you guys for both playing the game. Kyle, we will have you back soon to avenge your loss, all right?
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you guys for being patrons and playing the game. We have got to take another break when we come back. Yes, part two of our interview with Bret the Hitman Hart, where he talks about appearing at All Elite Wrestling Double or Nothing to present the title. How did it come about? Is there more from Bret with AEW? We'll talk about it next right here. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
I just want everyone to know how grateful and thankful it is for me to be here tonight, to be back in Las Vegas. 26 years ago, I defended the world title here, and it's a great, great honor for me to be here tonight for another sold-out world championship wrestling match tonight. It's a real honor. I want to thank AEW for giving me a chance tonight to be the first presenter of this absolutely beautiful belt here.
I want to live. I want to kill. I've been a miner for a heart of gold.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. Right there is the last, you know, public television appearance
yes.
by Bret Hart. Very much surprising. He popping up on Double or Nothing to present the AEW championship belt. And actually in that interview was also confronted by MJF as well, who's
yes.
one of their rising stars.
He is. He is definitely. He's a very talented heel. And we got Bret's thoughts on MJF, the whole AEW experience. And yeah, it was pretty interesting to hear Bret talk about this and actually how it all came about.
So let's get into it. The second half of our interview with Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah, let's talk about, you know, your involvement with AEW. You were at the big Double or Nothing show to reveal the championship. It certainly gives a lot of credibility to their title to have someone like you involved with the promotion. It was a great surprise for all of us watching. Can you kind of walk us through how this all came about? Because it really was a genuine surprise for everybody watching.
Well, you know, I didn't know a whole lot about AEW, but I know Chris Jericho, and I know Cody Rhodes, and I know some of the guys involved with it. And I Kenny Omega's, you know, everybody's kind of got an eye on him because he's been such a sort of a phenomenon for the last year or two and longer. But it was sort of just convenience, to be honest. It was, I would like to, I'm glad I helped them out, and I'm glad it worked out. I just happened to be in Las Vegas for another appearance that I was doing, and it just was just a simple act of convenience that I was there, and they wanted to know if I would do it, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'd do it. I'd be happy to do it. I'm happy to help these guys, and I hope that I wish them all the best, and I hope that they someday can be on par with WWE.
You know, Bret, seeing you out there was such a surprise to fans because we had just seen you at the WWE Hall of Fame, and you have had the ongoing relationship with WWE recently with making this appearance. Do you think it affects what you had been doing with WWE, and have you heard from them?
I haven't heard from anybody, but I don't think it should affect much. You know, I know Ric Flair was another guy that was supposed to be there in Vegas, and I think I was maybe a second choice to him, and he's tied in with WWE too. So I'm not exactly under any kind of Legends deal where I can't do I can do whatever I want, and nobody owns me.
And so the AEW thing, like you mentioned, just convenience because you were in Las Vegas. Is there any talk of doing any other appearances with him, or is that just a one and done?
We don't know. We're very good terms, and if there's some, you know, I'm very limited to what I can do. I mean, like if I said today, like I'll go and help AEW, I'm not quite sure what my role would be, and that would go the same for WWE. If WWE said, "Hey, we'll take you here," you know, I'm not really looking for work. I'm not looking for a job. I'm happy being home. And kind of being on the fringe of wrestling. If there was something, somebody had a nice idea that sounded like something fun I could do, I would certainly embrace it, same as I would with WWE. I certainly feel that I'm I'm a big supporter of the industry, period. And if I can help a small promotion, I do a lot of independent wrestling promotions to help help generate interest in their wrestlers and inspire some of the young wrestlers to come out. And I don't think, I mean, WWE often benefits down the road from the wrestlers that come up through the from these different independent wrestlers wrestling promotions. So it's not a bad thing to help somebody else out. And I don't think WWE, frankly, even cares. And I think the $300 billion they got from Fox Network is, you know, doing well enough that they don't need to worry about anybody. I don't think they care about anybody else, including AEW.
As far as the boys go, I mean, you were back. You've recently been backstage at WWE, and along with that, you know, being there in the AEW environment, do you get a different sense of the attitude from the two different organizations and the motivation of the boys behind the scenes?
Well, you know, from what I saw, I didn't see a whole lot of that. Like, I was around a lot of the wrestlers, but they seem like just like any other wrestlers, you know, comparable to WWE, where they're just focusing on their matches. But, you know, I will say that AEW does have some very talented guys. I mean, Moxley or Dean Ambrose is was a really great wrestler, I think. He's one of my favorite wrestlers that they had, and he was struggling in WWE with the way they were using him, and that happens. I mean, it's hard to make everybody happy, and you know, he sounded a lot like Punk on in one of his interviews that I heard recently of his, and that happens. And I think there's the best thing that can happen in the wrestling business or wrestling industry is that another company could start to become a force in the industry.
Yes.
And I think,
yes.
This Tony Khan and Cody Rhodes and all these guys have a great concept, and I wish them all the best. And I don't know that WWE has much problem with them, or if they do have a problem with them. And I don't know what I'll do with them from this point forward. But either company, I would be happy to work with if there was something they, you know, if WWE wanted me to present a belt, for example, I would do that too. I mean, I would, if either one of them had asked me, I would have. Something like that, I think is a dignified way for me to come back and, you know, at least let the fans see me and, you know, sort of let them know where I am in my life. And I was happy, really proud to be in the Hall of Fame this year and everything that WWE did for me. And, you know, at the same time, when AEW asked me if I would help them, you know, I'm good friends, very close friends with Jericho and some of these guys, and I had no problem at all. And I know that there's been some buzz that there's, you know, there might be a problem from that, but I doubt it. I'm a legend of wrestling, so I can go anywhere I want.
That's very true. I just quickly, you mentioned you like some of the guys there. I want to get your thoughts on MJF, who did the segment with you in AEW and came out and interrupted you. And I think he has real potential as a very solid heel in the future. And I just wanted to see what you thought of MJF.
I thought he was great. I thought he was he's definitely good on the mic and definitely has a way to, you know, get the crowd riled up. And I think he's a great new character in wrestling. And, you know, the young wrestlers today are sort of in a tough spot. They have to reinvent everything about themselves and character-wise. I mean, you've seen every character imaginable in wrestling, and now it's like, I don't know, it kind of gets boring sometimes if you don't have a, like, there's always room for a new gimmick that nobody's ever seen before, or a character that hasn't come along before, or somebody that's like a young Roddy Piper, or somebody that can really talk on the mic, or somebody that's a phenomenal high flyer or bump taker. There's all kinds of different styles and different mediums in wrestling, and I think the young wrestlers today have a tough time being fresh and being different than the wrestlers that were along 5 years ago. And then you have to reinvent yourself, your costumes. I mean, I personally, like, when I watch wrestling today and I see guys wrestling in pants, I always shake my head and go, nobody would fight in pants. Like, nobody wears pants. If someone had said to me that you're a cowboy Bret Hart and you got to wear Levi's, I would have been a really shitty wrestler, let me put it that way. I couldn't have done half the stuff if I can. And I see wrestlers wrestling in, you know, maybe their stretchy pants or something. But I mean, there's just no way I could have done that. I needed the old wrestling outfits that I used to wear, that seems like nobody wears anymore, were the best outfits. I mean, I was kind of like a football player once I had all my pads on. I had my elbow pads and knee pads, and I had my knees wrapped, and I had long tights that held everything together. And my whole outfit that I had, I couldn't have changed it ever. I know there was times that people said, we should change your look a little bit. And I remember thinking, I'm going to stay exactly with what the look I got, because A, that's what's working, and B, it's actually a really proper outfit for professional wrestling. Like when I fall out of the ring, I got elbow pads to protect my elbows. And if you look at what I used to wear, it was very simple, but it was very effective for being a pro wrestler. And I find today that a lot of wrestlers are more worried about, and the girls wrestlers too, are more worried about how they look walking out to the ring, but it restricts their performance a little bit. And that's the most important part of your what you're bringing to the table as a wrestler, is your ability in the ring. And if you can't perform so well because you got jeans on, or you got snowshoes on, or whatever it is, it's like, you can't, you might be funny, and you might look funny or look interesting going out to the ring, but you should be dressed to actually perform. And I wonder about that sometimes.
Well, Brett, we appreciate you taking time out today. I don't want to keep you. I know you're back from a bit of a tour, and you're going to be here next weekend in Kingston as well. But thank you for taking time out to chat with us this afternoon and talking about, you know, the Hall of Fame and AEW, because the whole wrestling world was curious.
Well, I want everyone in the wrestling world to know that I'm fine. I'm in a good place. I'm happy with, and I'm not looking for a full-time job in wrestling, period.
Well, there you have it. Our thanks to Bret Hart for joining us earlier today. And Mouth, he's would not work in pants.
If you're a wrestler, Bret Hart has laid down the law: don't wear pants in the ring.
It is very interesting in regards to what's going on with him right now, though, because clearly from that interview, he's hit a point in not just his career, but his life.
Yeah, for sure. He's comfortable.
He's content.
He's relaxed. He's not looking for work. He's not looking for appearances. He doesn't need the spotlight. Exactly. I think he's just happy to live his life and go about things in a normal way.
And, you know, you look at the way that AEW utilized Bret Hart for giving out the title and how respected he was. Mm. And this is something that WWE really lacks as far as how they treat their legends. For instance, let me throw this at you. Kurt Angle.
Right.
Look at how Kurt Angle was consistently embarrassed as he was proceeding towards his retirement.
And then the match itself was a joke.
Exactly. So you look at how Bret Hart's being used here. Obviously someone much more senior in age, but still at that level of a great champion and the respect. And I'm very curious if there is an ongoing relationship.
Yes, yes.
And I don't want a commissioner. I don't want anything like that.
No.
But just used in some sort of appearance.
I'll give you the comparison. This is what they do in New Japan when they used to have the big matches for the title. They would bring someone like Stan Hansen in.
Okay.
And they would just read the proclamation talking about the match and give it that air of authenticity by having a legend there and telling you, hey, this is a big title match, or this is a big match. And you could use him the same way. You just have him there in attendance. Maybe he reads a little thing or something. And it's just there as kind of like, to give it that authenticity, you know?
Yeah, and I think that there's a perception by Cody, in particular, who has grown up in the industry.
Right.
And it's like, these are my dad's friends. Could you imagine, you know, your dad's friends and how you look up to them and you respect these people that maybe you would call your uncles?
Right.
And how you grew up and how you remember looking up to them as a child and the respect that you would have for them. And I think that that's part of the reason why if we will see legends utilized somehow. Kenny Omega, when I chatted with him off air when he was doing his interview for this show, actually told me, I said, you know, it's nice the way you're looking into the future. And he actually said to me, yeah, but sometimes you got to look back to the past as well. Kenny made that point. We've seen Bret utilized, and I think there's going to be this era of respect used for legends, and wow, is that refreshing.
It is. Exactly. It's really cool that these guys will finally have a spot where they will get their due.
When we come back, we have got to talk a little bit more about Jon Moxley.
Mm.
We've got to talk a bit about Lars Sullivan.
Yes, we do.
We will do that.
We do.
When we return, Sunday night's main event is what you're listening to on TSN Radio.
There ain't no time for hearts, love, and honor. That ship left, and I wasn't on her.
Would you ever ask a nightingale why they sing their sweet song? Would you ever ask a lion why they methodically stalk their prey before sinking their teeth into flesh and viciously ripping it apart? Then why would you ever ask what drives a man like me?
Holla, holla.
People sing around, now people gather around, now people jump around. Get your freak on.
Welcome back. Final segment of the show. Now, normally this is purely feedback time, but we need some time to speak about Lars Sullivan.
Okay.
And we'll get to feedback, but I wanted to play that clip. We have avoided talking about him to this point, but Mouth, being a fan of classic wrestling,
yes,
and the big monster heels,
right,
there was the opportunity for WWE to create a monster heel. Now, we've seen two things happen this week with Lars. Number one, he cut that promo that I just played a clip of on SmackDown.
Right.
And number two, he nearly lost to the Lucha House Party on Super Showdown.
Ridiculous.
He absolutely nearly, he sold the whole match.
I know, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. That's the most obvious part to me, is what they did on Super Showdown, where he went out there and they made it look like he was having trouble dealing with these guys. And it's just like, no, that is not how you get a monster heel. That should have been, shorter than even Taker and Goldberg. That should have just been like, out there, he beats them all up, he leaves them lying, then that's it.
But no, instead he was nearly left lying at a certain point. Like, I couldn't believe when, I forget who it was.
And didn't he win the match on a DQ?
Yeah.
He wins the match on a DQ? How stupid is that?
It's like, insane.
Like, I couldn't believe that when the referee said he's been DQ'd. I'm like, what?
Well,
ridiculous.
I think, Mutt, there might be a bigger question here, is that with all the problems around Lars Sullivan and all the comments that were made, on boards years ago and statements that he made.
Yes. Yes.
Are they full in on Lars Sullivan anymore? Or
wow,
is this essentially showcasing that maybe he's not a big part of the puzzle as they thought he originally was going to be?
Well, it could be, absolutely, if they are that worried about those past comments. And because they certainly haven't, and I mean, that's the thing, monster heel booking is simple, it's not complicated, but they're certainly not making him look very effective ever since he came back the second time. It's kind of been a joke,
Well, I think they have done some squashes, they've at least tried. I was just blown away by this one.
But the thing about squashes is they have to be quick, and we don't see them. This thing with the Lucha House Party has gone on way too long.
No, this is terrible.
Like, way too long already. Like, he should have squashed him one time, and that's it. We don't see them again with him, and he moves on to something else. They keep dragging out. And, yeah, the Showdown thing, it's like, they're going to, yeah, the next match, they're going to win.
Well, you know what? If they do, then that's a very good indication of the fact that they've given up
exactly,
on Lars Sullivan.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see what happens on Raw or SmackDown, whichever one they happen to appear on this week. I think it's SmackDown they're on, unless they are one of the people that can switch over. But yeah, so on SmackDown this week, what they do.
Oh, everybody's got wild cards.
It's just so stupid.
Everybody's
it's
got
just
wild.
So dumb.
That's one of the first things that go through.
It's not everybody, Mouth.
No,
it's just the top five guys on each brand.
Well, that's what I mean. But as a joke for myself, for my own entertainment, I sit there every week and go, okay, who got the wild cards this week? And it's like, yeah, it's the same.
Same guys.
It is. It's the same four guys every week.
Let's talk about someone who is out there. And we talked about Jon Moxley in regards to appearing on the New Japan show last night. But along with that, we also saw Jon Moxley versus Juice Robinson. Very much a hardcore match. Me watching this, I found this to be quite old school, though, in the brawling. And I'm wondering, you, for someone that's a big fan of Brody and a big fan of Abdullah, like, what did you take out of this? Did you get that feel from it?
Well, a little bit. I mean, it's certainly, I think that they want Moxley to be in that kind of brawler kind of mode. But it was an okay match. It was one of those matches, to me, before I saw it, everybody was buzzing all over the place, and they thought it was great, and it was great.
No?
I thought it was okay.
Huh.
I didn't think, I guess, I mean, the New Japan standard is pretty high, right?
And it's a different style, though.
Well, still, I don't know. I think, honestly, and you might find this silly, but we do talk about wrestlers' appearances and how that adds to the gimmick. Juice Robinson cutting his hair is the biggest mistake He looks terrible now. He had a
generic.
Really,
he looks generic.
Yeah, and we look at how much we complain about that in WWE. How everybody looks the same. He had a really cool look going for him with the dreads and stuff.
It's
like
different.
That. And I thought, as soon as I saw him, that's what I thought too. I thought, oh, you look boring now. You look like an everyday Joe with just kind of a regular haircut. I don't quite understand what they're planning with Juice, but that was almost what stood out more than anything else.
Well, one thing that stood out to me is, as much as Bret Hart may not like guys wrestling in jeans, I have seen Moxley as Dean Ambrose so much, I didn't expect him in wrestling tights.
In trunks. It was kind of weird to get used to.
Yeah, I don't think I like it. I don't like it because of the way that he's wrestling.
Mm.
He's wrestling a hardcore style,
yeah.
And I feel that going back to traditional tights almost takes away from the character that he's trying to
portray.
And push out there with this Mox character.
Yeah, I understand that. I see your viewpoint. I don't know if that's something that he felt he should do because it's New Japan, or is he trying to break away from that in terms of the visual look as well? Maybe he just wants. Although he is still wearing the leather jacket and all that kind of stuff, right?
Even makes him look sillier when he's wearing the leather jacket and having the tights underneath.
Right. Yeah,
I think that looks.
It reminds me of when
Ric Flair used to wear a T-shirt and tights, and he looked like he had no pants on.
Yes, yeah, in those later years when he had to hide his stomach.
Yeah, not so good.
It is a weird look. Perhaps though, over the next little while, he'll fine tune it in that and get it down to something. But I honestly think the trunks thing might be partly New Japan and partly the fact that he probably wants to change the look up a bit.
Let's go to some feedback here. First of all, Sean Patrick Kelly says, finished watching Dominion, and I can definitely say that even though it got me watching the product last year, Chris Jericho's current run with New Japan has started to lose its life. Not a big fan of the Painmaker gimmick and very obvious attempts to differentiate this version of Jericho from AEW, including a new entrance with very generic music. Was it too much for you last night with more Jericho?
It wasn't too much. I do understand what he's saying, and I do think they are trying to do that, where his New Japan persona is somewhat different from his AEW persona.
Right.
I have to say, I didn't find the match was okay, but I don't think it was certainly one of the best Jericho matches that he's done in New Japan. I thought it was just kind of a regular okay brawl. I thought there were other matches on the card that were much more dramatic and creative. And the other thing, too, about the thing with Okada and Jericho that I found weird is because the gimmick, Jericho's the Painmaker, I was really surprised that Okada didn't win with the Rainmaker.
Right.
He won because Jericho was trying to pull off the Codebreaker, and then Okada just kind of grabbed him and fell on top of him and pinned him, which I thought was very strange since they're so big on this Painmaker-Rainmaker thing that I thought for sure they'd want Okada to beat him with the Rainmaker to just kind of, you know, put that, okay, Rainmaker, Painmaker, well, Rainmaker wins. So I was kind of surprised by that.
From an outsider perspective, looking into New Japan, because I don't follow the product that closely, I look at Jericho as losing too much.
Mm.
He's going in and he's challenging all the big names
and he's losing most,
becoming a high-end jobber in New Japan.
Yeah.
Now, that was the difference in AEW. Where he won.
Yes.
And he's going to go win that title.
Yeah, I would assume he would be great for the first champion, right?
And then you have the Kenny and Jericho rematch. I'm not tired of that aspect of Jericho.
I like
it a lot because they're evening things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to say it's parody booking. I mean they have a goal in mind.
Yes, yeah, they're working towards something.
If he's going to continue in New Japan to be any sort of a draw, he's got to win at some point, don't you think?
Yes, I agree. And if they are going to do a match with Tanahashi, he should go over.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Reese says, why didn't Seth claim the briefcase when Brock dropped it? Could have been something different. New Japan was great. Super Showdown, well, it happened. We didn't really talk much about Brock not cashing in once again. We mentioned it with Dave.
Yeah.
But I don't think it works that way.
No, I don't think just because Paul Heyman dropped the briefcase, I don't think that means Seth can just grab it and take it.
No. I mean, who knows what can happen to WWE, but...
Well, that's true. They can bend the rules however they want.
They're pretty dumb, but that would be really, really dumb.
It doesn't make... And why would the champion want to have the Money in the Bank?
Yeah, that's also
true. That doesn't make sense.
Okay, but, you know, let's look at this. Kevin actually said on the feedback, is it me or during the Kofi match, Renee started talking about Brock and then just dropped it like she wasn't supposed to be talking about him? Kevin, let's expand on that feedback and let's talk about where Brock is going to cash in. Because honestly, it's not going to be Seth. In my opinion, It's Kofi and it's Fox
in October,
and they're holding it.
I agree.
And what the problem has been is they've just pushed this. We're not going to cash in. And you know, Mark joked last week when he co-hosted the show about they're just going to have him keep doing it 20 times. And I'm not going to put that by him anymore.
Yeah.
Mark's silly joke
could be reality.
May very well be happening here.
I agree with you completely. I don't see it happening until the fall when they're on Fox with SmackDown.
First one, Mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
First damn show.
Yeah, exactly. And if that's not telegraphing it, I don't know what is, right?
And that's fine. And,
well, yes and no, because...
It's a purposeful booking.
Oh, yeah, but... And it also negates the months leading up to it, though. Like, I mean, now the whole entire... I mean, I know it's summer and maybe it doesn't mean as much anyways, but now the whole entire... Anything involving Brock is... It's not nearly as interesting because you know nothing's happened until October.
Well, you don't know that, though, and he can keep teasing it. And I think the gimmick now, Mouth, will be, like what Mark said, he's going to keep coming out and he's going to keep teasing it, and it's going to be they're going to push the fans to hate the boy who cried wolf.
Well, I see. So, and then, well, the one time when they finally he goes to cash it in, will they believe him?
Well, who knows? I mean, that's going to be Fox, right?
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't call his shot on Fox. Maybe he does just cash in, and it becomes something that.
I just think if he goes the boy who cried wolf routine, it's going to get stale fast, and fans are not going to be want to wait till October if every week he comes and goes, I'm going to cash in. I fooled you. I'm not.
So hold on. You're going to tell me that fans aren't going to like something on WWE TV? Oh, my goodness.
Mm.
Amazing.
I think it could happen.
So with that in mind,
call me crazy.
We mentioned the gentleman that came up with that theory, and his name was Mark Andrada. And my goodness, listen, if you didn't like Super Showdown, one thing, if you follow along with this show, that you had to like was the hype around the six-pack challenge last week. And it was Mark Andrada versus Dan Lavransky, and it was for Super Showdown. We actually have a six-pack. So this is now brought to us by Great Lakes Brewery, and we're giving away a six-pack to one of these two gentlemen for the Over My Dad Body Pilsner that they have. It's a great summer beer.
Yeah, really good for summer.
It is here in studio, and I brought it here because it will be awarded to Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
Learn to love it, Andrada. Woo!
So here's what happened. The first pick was Mark, and he picked Finn Balor. He got that right. Then you picked Lars, and I guess we'll give you that point.
Even though it was DQ, he won. That's the question. Who wins?
Mark then picked Shane. He got that. Mouth, you picked Taker. You got that. Mark picked Triple H. And that means, Mouth, you got that point.
That's
where
right.
He made an error because Randy Orton went over in that. Mouth, you picked Kofi. You got that right. Mark picked Seth. He got that. Mouth, you picked Braun. You got that. So, and then the Battle Royal picks where the only person who actually picked a performer that was in the Battle Royal was Mark picking Ricochet because the other picks were Angle, Wyatt, Lesnar, McIntyre, and Big Show. And none of you guys, none of them were even in the Battle Royal.
I did not think the Battle Royal was going to be so bargain basement. I thought we would have some of the mainstream guys. And I thought someone like Show, just because he's a legend and they like that stuff over there.
So with that in mind, we have a score of 5-3 out of the 8 matches that were selected, even if Mark, who is protesting, saying he deserves a point for the Battle Royal.
I've already talked to President Jack Tunney, and that's been overruled.
It would still only be 5-4. So therefore, Dan Lavransky, congratulations. You're the first winner.
Listen to this, Mark Andrada. Oh, yeah, baby. That's the sound of victory right there. I'm going to be chugging, and you're going to be sobbing, baby, because you get none, and I get it all, and ta-ta till next time. If you feel you want to try again, just step up. The Mouth is waiting.
He has already thrown down the challenge. The two of you will compete once again. It will be a rematch, and it will happen for Stomping Ground next weekend. The two of you will be on the show. Mouth is drinking the beer right now. But for
the taste of victory, ladies and gentlemen.
We got to get out of here. This is getting out of hand. We got to get out of here. We got to say goodbye. Thank you all for tuning in once again. You've been listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Next week, we're back with that six-pack challenge and covering the week in wrestling and doing it each and every week. Thank you, Mouth, for coming in.
All right, no problem, Mark Andrada. You are getting stomped into the ground for Stomping Ground. Just be ready for it.
Until next week, you've been listening to Sunday Night's Main Event right here on TSN Radio. Don't you dare miss it.
Brother!